This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by an anonymous donor and Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on 98 in Daphne and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning once again to you, Laurie. Here we are on the eve of Valentine's Day.
That's right.
It's a gorgeous day, and all things are good.
Yes.
Except we're back to having balloon problems. I mean, you know, last week Commander Cox was here on the radio show, and we talked in depth about the balloon that was shot down on the 4th of February. Yes.
I would like people to know that that interview is now posted on our website. And
oh,
you can access it at WABF1480.com. Click on interviews and talk shows. Later I heard another syndicated national talk show that afternoon, and they pretty much reiterated everything you and Deke said.
Ah, yes. Well, fame and fortune is still
impressive.
In the grasp, I guess. All right.
Very
so,
impressive.
Well, that but the serious part of what Laurie just said was that we do try to bring you the very best conservative interpretation of the various things that's going on. So I think it's nice to hear something like that, and I do appreciate that. Well, but here again, excuse me, we're back to balloons. Okay, so we're going to have to talk more about these objects that. That we found from Friday through Sunday, three more shoot downs. So let's try to dig into that one. I also really want to try to talk about Biden's State of the Union, probably one of the worst States of the Union addresses ever. But nevertheless, we need to kind of tease out some of the issues that were brought out there, and make sure we understand where we're going in trying to defeat not only Biden and Bidenism, but the whole woke left agenda. And that's really what this is all about, okay? I also want to talk about some other foreign policy issues. Two dangerous actors, the Iranians and the North Koreans, have kind of slipped under the radar screen because we're so tied up with all this other domestic hoorah and the balloon issue, I think. So we should probably just take a minute to review some of the things that's going on with those two bad actors, who have been you know allowed to do a whole lot more under Biden than obviously under Trump, and that is not good at all. Okay, I do want to try to take some time to look at a couple of domestic issues. One being what the House can do to curtail or at least hamper the complete runaway train of woke ideology being injected into everything that goes on. And I think Stephen Miller really gave a couple of good examples that we should just listen to and try to make sure that our elected representative in Congress down here, Jerry Carl, you know, understands what they can do to stop some of this stuff that goes on. And then lastly, if I have time, and I'm sure Lori will give me my extra minute. Oh, she's looking aghast at that. Okay. So I want to talk about Governor Ivey and her number one priority, edumacation. Hey, folks, where the hell has she been since 2010? I mean, she was there as lieutenant governor when good old Riley put in Common Core. And that started the descent from being number 25 in education to number 52 in math and 48th in ELA. And now we're 48th in both. And we're all happy now. Oh, that's wonderful. We're doing good. We're doing good. No, we're not. And all she's going to do, according to her priority, is to get us to 30th in the country. Okay, well, fine. That's obviously better than 52nd. But it's even short of where we were in 2010. She has no clue. She's bought and paid for by the BCA money. BCA wants this. The education establishment wants Common Core and the indoctrination that goes with it. This is the BS factor. And this is what got me in trouble with some of our Republican friends, because we would not endorse Ivy and Katie Britt, especially Ivy. We went ahead and endorsed Jimmy Blake, former councilman from Birmingham, medical doctor, owns his own practice, entrepreneur. And for that, we have been called libertarians. I can just tell you something. We're not libertarians. We are the conservative wing of the Republican Party. We're the only ones in Baldwin County that stood up and said no to both Ivy and Britt. Everybody else in the Republican Party just kind of folded. Oh, my God, we're Republicans. We've got to support them. Now, we don't have to support the damn Republicans who are rhinos and worse. Okay, so I just want to get that off my chest for 1 second before I get into this morning. All right, so here we are. More balloons. I mean, or objects. I mean, it seems like they were willing to call the balloon that they shot down over Prudhoe Bay in Alaska as a balloon, but then they've kind of backed off of claiming anything other than an object for the Canadian thing and then the one that got shot down over Lake Huron. All right, so understand this, okay? Number one, have you heard of these balloon-type incursions before the big balloon that was shot down on the 4th of February? And the short answer is hell no. Now, here's what Biden and them have started to do. Well, these things have gone on before, and there were at least three or four of these during the Trump administration. Here again, every one of the Trump people in the national security area said categorically, we never heard of anything like that. And yet, General Keane on Wall Street Journal this weekend, he referenced the three that were during the Trump campaign. I'm not quite sure why Keane is following that line of thought, but here's the issue. They're using Trump's supposed neglect, when he had balloons to make it okay for how Biden approached the balloon that we talked about last week with Commander Cox. Now, that huge balloon was gathering intelligence all over this country, moving across the northern part into the Midwest. And guess what they're doing? They're gathering intelligence on the strategic triad, okay? The Minuteman missiles, the Patriot missile defense places, the B-2 bomber areas. They're taking pictures. They're doing everything they can. They're monitoring data, finding intelligence, and who knows what else. This was no small thing, folks, okay? And the fact that Biden finally had to shoot it down, finally. And, I mean, as a sidebar, they didn't even say anything about it until people in Montana saw it. I think pilots were observing it. And then they had to come clean on what was going on. But notice what they did. They just let it hang and hang and hang and move and move and move. And finally, for safety reasons, supposedly, they didn't want to shoot it down over, you know, areas where people could get hurt. And I understand that. But the reality is they let it go on and on and on. And it seems to me that, you know, over Montana would have been a good place to shoot it down. You know, lots of space, big sky country, blah, blah, blah. But oh no, they just let it linger over our strategically important bases. And then he finally had to do something. Now, of course, he's claiming, you know, hero status for shooting it down. I mean, it's sad, okay? And I know that last week we talked about this in great depth, so I'm not going to repeat all of those things. But let's just put it this way, okay? You have the balloon, the big balloon shot down on the 4th of February. Then last Friday, on the 10th, they shot down another, they called it a balloon, smaller version, over Prudhoe Bay in Alaska, okay? Now, the next thing that happens is on the 11th, Saturday, another object, now they're describing it as, gets shot down in over Canada. And then Sunday, the 12th, we have another object shot down over Lake Huron. In theory, the Canadian and the Lake Huron objects were shot down because they were flying below 40,000 feet, and so they presented a threat to civil aviation. Yes, Lori, that's
They're calling them objects, though. They've not confirmed Chinese spy balloons?
Well, they're just saying objects, and they don't know where the origin is yet. That's another point that I was going to get to, okay. But since we're there, this is another problem with this whole business here, okay? So you have these 3 days of objects being shot down, okay? Here's something that the military folks said, I guess the NORAD guys, they're the ones in charge of all this, okay? They said there's domain awareness gaps here. And you're thinking to yourself, boy, this is real bureaucratie speak here, okay? Domain awareness gap, what the hell does that mean? It means they don't know shit about, they don't know anything about what's going on, okay? They don't know where this thing came from, where these things came from. So you have to ask yourself, okay, how are our defenses really, are our defenses really capable of dealing with these kinds of incursions? And you say, well, they're just objects. They're okay. There's not a problem. Hey, guys, guess what? It's the same problem we had with the big balloon. Okay? The big balloon just traverses the country. Nobody says anything about it. Some smarter people kind of said, wow, this is just putting blind trust in whatever's going on. And they're right. Blind trust is not a strategy. Hope is not a plan. You know, hoping that this thing is okay. Hoping there's no EMP on it. Hoping that there's no sub-drone or hypersonic missile that's attached to it that gets shot out and we can't stop it. And it just destroys whatever the target is. And you say, okay, well, that's kind of Looney Tunes, Lou, because nobody's going to do that. Really? Really? Nobody's going to do a surprise attack like that? Let's see. Let's talk about Pearl Harbor. Let's talk about 9/11. You know, surprises do happen. And this whole idea that we can't really trace where these things are coming from, that's a high BS factor, okay? Our survival depends upon our ability to not only note that something's coming in to do bad things, but that we know where it's coming from so that we can react to it. And in this particular case, oh my God, domain awareness gap. Thank you so much. I mean, billions of dollars. And here again, I mean, we've had the same problem with the CIA, okay? How many billions of dollars have been spent out there? And William Buckley was right. If we had a real CIA, bad things would happen to bad guys and we would be better off. But that ain't happening, especially under the Clapper and all the rest of those people who are involved, you know, Brennan. You talk about the Manchurian candidate. I mean, I get it with Biden, but some of those people that Obama appointed, they were just part and parcel of the problem of the Manchurian candidate, you know, who's in charge of something extremely important, but, you know, doesn't see the real issues out there, you know, and is willing to compromise the United States' position and ability to protect itself because these people have a different view of things, okay? At any rate, here we are. how in the world are we going to kind of, you know, think about these kinds of incursions, all right? Let's kind of tease this out a little bit, all right? So the big balloon incursion that got shot down on the 4th, that's pretty easy. Intelligence gathering, okay? But as critics have pointed out, how do you know that it's just going to be intelligence gathering? They didn't know. And that's the mindset problem. They didn't have the foggiest idea of what that thing was all about. And yes, you can put U2s around it and try to analyze it and blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine, they did that. But the real question is, when it's sitting over Montana and Missouri, the heartland of America, and they don't really know what's going on with it, and it's got an EMP capability, as we've all said for the last 10 years, somebody pops a nuke in the middle of the country with an EMP capability, and the grid goes away. The grid goes away. And that leaves us vulnerable to all sorts of bad news. So after the EMP with the big balloon, who's to say that hypersonic missiles weren't going to be coming in to do a Pearl Harbor on our Minutemen systems? I mean, what happens if they have a counter, you know, a counter to us that just eliminates our forces, our ability to strike back? I mean, deterrence is really kind of part and parcel of being able to withstand a nuclear strike and being able to respond and just destroy the person who just launched that thing. And I realize this is the, you know, mad approach. I get that. But mad at least had a certain amount of symmetry there, that the bad guy, and it was the Russians that we were most concerned about, would be destroyed because we had Polaris missiles, we had all sorts of, you know, options that wouldn't be taken out in a surprise raid. You know, and I think that calculation is still part and parcel of where we are in terms of trying to deal with the possibilities of a mad issue. And it is mad. But I mean, Mao's the one that said this a long time ago. Hey, we'll have a nuclear war and we'll lose, you know, a couple of 100 million people, and it's okay. We can live with that. I mean, if that's their thinking, then there's an issue with that, obviously. At least during the Cold War with Khrushchev in 1962 at the Cuban Missile Crisis, Khrushchev blinked, in part because he saw the destruction that had been taking place during World War II. And he wasn't willing to put his people through that again with the possibility of a nuclear exchange. Is that same thinking in China today? I mean, think about it. I mean, Xi out there, you know, they're perfectly willing right now to see hardship imposed on their people. They put them under the COVID arrest system. Then they had this big explosion. People protested. Of course, hundreds of thousands are dying in China because of the COVID. But the point is, you know, is the Chinese Communist Party willing to deal with the possibility of a nuclear exchange that costs them 300, 400, 500 million people? And if they are, then that kind of puts us into a different situation. Contextually speaking, these balloons and these objects are what? Probes to see what we do? Are they just part and parcel of, you know, a more severe approach to gathering intelligence, an in-your-face approach that dares us to do something about it? I mean, when you start thinking about this, it seems to me that we better start thinking about how in the world, you know, we're going to deal with these kinds of continued probes. Now, obviously, shooting them down is one thing to do, but it seems to me that one of the important parts of this goes right back to the whole issue of Biden and his approach to China, okay? So we're really kind of back to last week's show where we were talking about Chinese Communist Party's intent. What's Xi's intent, okay? We know that the Chinese Communist Party put out its doctrine that basically said it's at war with the United States. I mean, Commander Cox was clear about this. It's in the public domain. You can read it for yourself, okay? So if that's where they are, then it seems to me that, you know, we have better start paying attention to that aspect of this. But notice, what did Biden talk about in regards to China during the State of the Union? Very little. What has Biden talked about in terms of China as a threat? He poo-poos the idea. I mean, during the campaign, you know, he just, you know, threw down the gauntlet to Trump, saying, "You can't believe that China is a threat. They can't do anything to us. We're the top power." Blah blah blah. I mean, it was a nutty way to look at China. And of course, the light goes on. I know why he's saying that, and you know too, because the Biden family, excuse me, has taken so much money from the Chinese and other foreign entities that they are compromised. Now, the C word is being used during these investigations that are going on into Hunter Biden's laptop and all the rest of that stuff. It should have been done years ago. The FBI sat on the Hunter Biden laptop for 10 months. And then once the story broke, as you may recall, in October, right before the November 2020 election, what happened? The intelligence people came out and said, 51 of them, this is all Russian disinformation. It's not true. Okay, so long and the short of this is that if it's because Biden's compromised, or if because it's Biden's just plain wrong about foreign policy, which according to Bill Gates, not Bill Gates, whatever Gates is last, Secretary of Defense Gates, he said in his book, Biden has been wrong about every foreign policy issue for the last 40 years. All right, so here we are. Contextually speaking, we have a president who is either compromised or so stupid when it comes to foreign policy that he's just off the rails wrong. Take your choice. It's either one. Okay? So when we talk about the Chinese Communist Party and their intent to destroy us, how in the world do we have a leader who can't even put one and one together to come up with two? I guess it's Common Core math or some crap like that. But here we are, facing a major adversary. And this major adversary has gone a long way towards making sure that in the military sphere, as Commander Cox has talked about before, and I'll just repeat it now, look at what they've done in building up their missile program. Okay? They now have as many ICBMs, more than we do. The only problem there for them is that they don't have them, you know, with multiple, you know, it's called MIRVing, and I'm having a Monday morning shot, multiple reentry warheads. They're not MIRVed the way ours are. So in theory, the equation is still on our side if we had to do a response to an attack. But notice, too, though, where they have built up in terms of their Navy. They've got many more ships than we do. Look at what they've done with their Air Force. Look at what they've done with their anti-ship missile capability, which really gives them an advantage when it comes, and we've talked about this with Commander Cox and I mentioned it before, a standoff capability for in terms of making sure that our naval forces, the 7th fleet in the Pacific are going to be in very dangerous waters if something goes on, particularly with Taiwan. So, again, contextually speaking, you know, when I ask, you know, what's the intent here, just in terms of the balloons and these incursions and all like that, it seems to me pretty clear that the Chinese are moving in the direction that not only plays into their own playbook in terms of destroying the United States, and there are many ways to do that, okay, not just by a nuclear attack, but the point is that they seem set on doing that, okay? Now, I would urge you to think carefully about Xi's situation in China, okay? You know, are they the 800-pound gorilla in the international world? In many ways, they are. From the economic sphere, though, they've had major problems. And so the Chinese economy may not be as strong as we think. And, of course, the data on all this is kind of iffy anyway. But here you have Xi, who has just been elected to an unprecedented third term. He is a powerful individual, yet he has domestic problems. Again, I mentioned earlier, the COVID protests. Those kinds of issues, again, kind of harken back to the problems that the Chinese saw with Russia, and where you had the Russian Communist Party folding up the tent, allowing perestroika and glasnost to essentially bring it down. And they were not going to repeat that. And so when Tiananmen Square came about, look at how they handled that. Not the same way the Russians handled, you know, the uprising that the Russian army did was just faded away. Not so in China. Chinese Communist Party crushed it. They will crush their opposition. And so you have this sense here with Xi that he's already been talking about Taiwan. The Taiwan issue is becoming more prominent for them, not only because of the domestic issues at home that are problems for Xi, but he's also got to deal with the more than likely election of a candidate who in Taiwan who wants to declare independence. And again, this goes back to Nixon and Kissinger, the two-state solution. You know, that's gone. I mean, to be honest with you, and I've said this before in terms of how we need to have physical deterrence on Taiwan, just like we have a deterrent factor in South Korea with the army there, we should have army or marine forces on Taiwan to help defend, yes, but make it a trigger point. Send a very strong signal to Xi, you cross this line, you're in it with us, not just with Taiwan. My point here again, the politics of Taiwan are moving in the direction where if they have someone who is going to be elected on an independence platform, is Xi going to put up with that? This is 2024. So the argument basically becomes he's having problems right now. He needs a distraction. He's got the possibility of an even worse problem in 2024 if this guy wins and Taiwan goes down an independent road. Then what? Better to take care of the problem now. Better to take care of it when we know who Biden is and his compromised state. Because look at this from the standpoint of Xi. Why should he be afraid of what Biden is going to do? Biden ain't Trump, folks. Biden says nothing about human rights violations in China, what they're doing to the Uyghurs, a genocidal approach to things. Nothing about shutting down freedom in Hong Kong. Nothing about stealing our intellectual property rights. Nothing about anything. Nothing. They see each other. Nothing is mentioned about any of these issues. Compared to what Trump not only talked about in terms of those issues, but what Trump did, putting tariffs on China. Now, it's true that Biden has not lifted those tariffs yet. But it seems to me that at some point, this whole business with China and Biden's approach to China has to go in a different direction. And given either Biden being compromised or just being wrong about foreign policy in general, we'll see how this goes. But I do think, you know, the real issue really is, how is Biden going to react to this challenge from China? And these balloons and objects, whatever the hell they are all part and parcel of it. So I think that there's just a lot to think about with this. And once again, what do we as grassroots people do in terms of, okay, we acknowledge that it's a problem. We want to make sure that our representatives, both in the Senate, Tuberville and Katie Britt, and here at home, Jerry Carl, have a full measure of where we stand on these things. And that's our responsibility, to make sure that they get that information from us about our sense of what needs to be done. And they need to fight for that. Well, I've already talked a little bit about the SCOTUS, the state of the United States speech, okay? I mentioned the lack of China. He didn't really talk much about it, okay? And again, I'm not going to repeat it, but I do think that one of these issues that had to be talked up was a sincere discussion about the threat of China and what it all means. And he just walks away from it. Absolutely walks away from it. Well, here's another thing that I thought was classic Biden. He talks in his opening piece about, unity, and he talks jokingly with McCarthy, we're going to have good negotiations. And then he lays into the Republicans with lies about what they want to do, okay? Taking away Social Security and Medicare. That's not what the Republicans are doing. It doesn't matter whether, you know, what he's saying is a lie. What they want to do is reform the entitlements, okay? And yes, reforming entitlements is almost as the third rail of politics. I get that, okay? But at some point, with almost $32 trillion in debt, we better start thinking about how we're going to fix all of this so that these entitlements can be, you know, taken care of from a financial standpoint going forward. And I think it's just playing politics with something which, with a $32 trillion debt already, how in the world do we just kind of pass over this and just kind of completely argue from a political standpoint? Lori has a question.
He claimed he had reduced our national debt lower than it has been.
I mean, he claims that he actually cut the deficit too, okay? I mean, it's all BS, all right? But just because it's BS doesn't mean that it doesn't have an impact. So all of those folks who support Biden are thinking, oh, yeah, right, go on, save our Social Security, save our, you know, blah, blah, blah. Then he goes to Florida and starts taking aim at DeSantis and all the elderly who live in Florida with that same message. So, I mean, look, it's one thing to talk about unity, and then it's another thing to go stand out on last July 4th and talk about the MAGA Republicans being a threat to democracy. Look, this is what they do, okay? But from a policy standpoint, in terms of trying to fix the issues, of how to deal with the with the debt. It's going to be up to the Republican House to try to manage the budget somewhere. And of course, look what happened as soon as they started talking about, you know, just using the budget from 22 as their baseline. The Democrats are squealing, screaming, that's cutting, that's cutting. You know, well, I mean, here again, reasonable people can disagree about what to cut, how much to cut, and all like that. But if your basic approach is going to be, excuse me, no cuts at all, then we're just going to keep repeating the problems of the past, and that's just going to lead to a financial disaster. Okay? So, I mean, here again, you know, you heard a lot of raucous, you know, going on, and what's her name? Marjorie Taylor Greene, you know, she cried out, liar. She's right. I mean, how in the world do we deal with this kind of stuff and really think that anything positive is going to come out of it? I mean, since he didn't talk much about China, he did mention fentanyl. But look how he mentioned fentanyl within the process. Oh, we've got to get on cut production and don't let more people get these pills and all like that. And the obvious problem is it's all coming across from the border, which he has opened up. Speaking of the border, he didn't mention anything about that except to blame the Republicans because they won't support his plan. His plan is nothing more than to enable the Border Patrol to process better, not to stop the flow. I mean, reasonable people can disagree about certain things, okay? We can argue about the DACA program, you know? I mean, my personal feeling on DACA is that kids who were brought across young, and if they've, you know, gotten an education, have a good record, then maybe they should be considered for citizenship, okay? I mean, if we're going to let the illegals have babies in the United States and they become citizens automatically, then it seems to me that the DACA argument is that maybe we should. But it's not just going to be a DACA abroad. It has to be DACA based on performance, okay? Lori's looking askance at that. But nevertheless, my point is that we can have differences about things like that. We can talk about those kinds of things. What we can't talk about is 5 million people coming across the border in the last 2 years. I'm sorry. 600,000 gotaways. How many of those gotaways are terrorists? So far, we've caught 100. 100 known terrorists have come across that we caught. How many are gotaways? How many Chinese? They say there are 1,800 Chinese that they've gotten. And maybe all of these Chinese want to come across and get away from China. I could understand that. But what happens if that's not the reason for coming? So you've got Chinese gotaways, who may very well be part and parcel of a fifth column movement. I mean, talk about fifth column movement. You've got thousands of Chinese students in this country. You've got Chinese police setting up in New York and in other cities. What the hell is that all about? So the whole business with his State of the Union was just a joke. You know, absolutely a joke. All right, so, Lord. You know, Lori, it's just...
Do you need to take a break?
No, I'm not. I'm gonna suck it up and keep driving on.
I will say you are listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review on WABF 1480 with Dr. Lou.
Thank you. That was a nice drink of water I was able to get. All right, so look, let's move on to some other things to talk about, such as the Iranians and the North Koreans, foreign policy issues. What's going on with them? Well, the Iranians, the Israeli intelligence has discovered that they have now developed underground bases where they're housing their Air Force planes, okay? So, again, notice how they've been able to do underground for their nuclear facilities at Natanz and Fordham, okay? These facilities are hardened. They are difficult to take out, even with, you know, the kind of bombs that we have. And so what this really means is that in the post-Trump era, where the Iranians are now being, you know, seen as, you know, a group of people that we have to talk to, we've got to get them back on the nuclear deal. Hopefully the nuclear deal is dead. But this was Biden's approach. They have soft-pedaled and just softballed everything that goes on with the Iranians. Whereas with Trump, not only did they sanction them, brought them to their knees economically, and then they killed the master terrorist. I mean, Trump was serious about the Iranian threat. Not so Biden. And his State Department group, Blinken, and others who were part and parcel of the original Iranian deal, they want this. They're hot for this. They will not take no for an answer. And so the part of the equation that has been missing is the American response. But the other part of the equation is, what are the Israelis doing? And with Netanyahu back in power, and with never again a real approach to dealing with the Iranian threat, my argument would be, don't be surprised if when the Israeli intelligence people really think that the Iranians have a missile with a bomb that can destroy Israel, the Israelis are going to take these places out, and if they can't use conventional bombs to blow them up, they'll nuke them. And we'll see what happens. Because, you know, never again is a real issue for the Israelis. And the Iranians are a real threat. So that's something to think about. Here's another little thing to think about. Kim Jong-un, I mean, an idiot of the first order, but notice what happened when Trump was in power. Now, a lot of people got down on Trump for having letters to go back and forth and meeting Kim Jong-un and all like that. I understand that. But the smart set has always believed in diplomacy. Except when Trump does it, then they all get, oh my God, he's selling us out, blah, blah, blah. Well, who sold who out is another issue, okay? But it's interesting to note that during the Trump period, Kim Jong-un stopped shooting missiles, stopped testing them, okay? Last year, they shot over 90. They had over 90 tests. More important than the tests, though, is the rhetoric that's coming out. And, I mean, I hate to watch Fareed Zakaria, but every now and then he has a good program that talks about things that are worth listening to. He had a North Korean expert who talked about the fact that North Korea is now talking about preemptively striking South Korea. South Korea is now starting to talk about, guess what, having their own nuclear arsenal. Now, why do you think that they would want their own nukes? During the Trump period, I would argue that South Korea knew damn well that the United States would stand by them. In theory, even under Biden, we're supposed to be still with South Korea, protecting them. And like I said a little while ago, we've got the army there. So if North Korea should suddenly strike with either conventional or nuclear weapons, then our troops are going to be right in the middle of it. And that should theoretically bring us in to the fight. I say theoretically because it all depends on what Blinken, the State Department, and Austin, the Defense Department, and what Biden do. These people are not warriors. And I think that the degree to which they would think twice about a counterstrike is something which has crossed the South Koreans' mind. That's why they're thinking about going nuke themselves, because they don't trust this American government. So let's just kind of think about that and how all of this works itself out. Okay. Well, here's another part of this that I did want to talk to, and I still actually have a few minutes to go, don't I, Lori?
Yes, about 8 minutes.
8 minutes. See, she's on the clock. She watches the clock. Boy, I tell you.
I live life in seconds.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So let's kind of shift to some domestic issues. All right. Now we know that Congress under the House is now under control of the Republicans. Got it. The Senate has a one-member majority. So the question of what the House does sending legislation to the Senate is it's problematic. I get that. But there are some hopeful hints, okay? Sinema has become an independent. Manchin seems to be even now at war with what's going on with his own party. So the possibility that the Republicans could get two votes from disaffected members on the Senate, Democratic members from the Senate, is a real possibility. Having said that, then, what can the House do to slow down or kill some of this woke stuff? Okay? And Stephen Miller was on Maria Bartiromo's show Sunday morning. And he made the point that if the Republicans are smart, they'll use the power of the purse to slow things down, okay? So, for the Department of Homeland Security, the appropriation should be able to stop the open borders business that's going on, okay? For the education appropriation, they should be able to, you know, stop CRT and gender issues by just defunding all of that. For HHS, that appropriation should be able to curtail all the COVID nonsense and more gender nonsense. The Commerce Bill should be able to, you know, do something with China and its most favored nation status. So as we think about those kinds of, you know, opportunities that are there, we in the grassroots, once again, I would argue, need to be cognizant of these things, and we need to be putting pressure on not only our representative, Jerry Carl, but the rest of the Alabama delegation. And we will be doing that through the Alabama Conservative Coalition. There's no question we're going to do that, okay? Well, as we think about what to do to influence the House towards a certain policy perspective, how about good old Ivy and her education priority being known? As I said at the beginning of this, where the hell has she been for the last 13 years? Okay? She is part of the problem. Okay? Not only from the standpoint she's been up there all these years, that's a given. But just think about this. A year and a half ago, 2 years really now, our ACC group had put together a team that eventually was led by Terry Lathan, who spoke to Nick Moore, Superintendent Mackey. They had meetings there online and in person. This is 2021, maybe April. COVID's still an issue. The whole idea was our team with Lathan was going to meet with the governor and lay out why she should go ahead and take a resolution that the ACC had given the State Department of Education. We had four members who were going to vote to get rid of Common Core. We needed that fifth vote. Ivy could have been the fifth vote. There were two other votes that were there by rhinos. They would not go along with it. But we had four votes. We needed five. The governor's the fifth vote. And so Terry Lathan met with the governor, summer of 21. Where do you think that went? I've told you before, but I'll remind you now. She said, well, I don't want to do that. I don't want to get rid of Common Core math, in part because she's the one that said, we have eradicated Common Core math, which was a BS lie in 2019. Okay? Common Core math was there. She didn't want to get rid of Common Core math because the Business Council of Alabama and all the edumacrats who are dyed-in-the-wool left-wingers didn't want to get rid of it. They embrace Common Core in all of its aspects, okay? So Lathan is told, no, I'm not going to take the resolution and get rid of it. I am going to start a task force, and we're going to find out what's going on. Well, that task force ended up, and I've mentioned this to you before, turned into the Numeracy Act, okay? And I'm not going to go through all that again. Let me just say this. Now she has this education number one priority, okay? She's got four executive orders. The first one is Executive Order 729, which basically embraces this Dolly Parton library network where essentially they're going to send books to newborn children at an age-appropriate level. Look, $4.1 million to do this. All right, I suppose that any kind of enhancement towards reading is good. But guess what? Let me just say it. The families that these books are going to, do you think they're going to give two hoots about it? I don't think so. You're just throwing money down the rat hole. All right? But she has another one, okay? Her next one is Executive Office 730. Now she's going to have a governor's commission on teaching and how to improve various aspects of elementary and secondary education. And there's a long list of people who are on it, none of whom I would say you should take heart will do anything about Common Core. The next one is 731, okay? It directs Mackey to submit a report. This is good. This is real bureaucratic here. This is bureaucratic number one. Write a report. Tell us what's going on. So he's supposed to give a progress report on all of the things that are going on as well as previous things that have happened. All right? Then the last one is actually not a bad idea. It's Executive Order 732. Okay? It's a K-12 apprenticeship so that if you wanted to be a teacher and you're a professional, so like if I wanted to go be a teacher because I may not have a teaching certificate here in Alabama, but because I've got all this education background, I could probably get it greased through, and that's not a bad idea. Louisiana's been doing that for a long time. My point being, the priority is education, and it doesn't include getting rid of Common Core? You've got to be kidding me. This is a high BS factor. I really want to say something bad, but Lori's looking directly at me, and she's got the finger on the button. All right, I won't say it, but you know what I'm thinking. It's okay. All right, so
it's time for the program to come to an end.
Yes. Okay. All right, so folks, All right.
He's stomping his feet.
Hopefully we won't have more balloons this next week, okay? But what I want to do next week is I'm going to ask George Williams to come on. We're going to talk about Black history. It's an interesting topic. It's a necessary topic for us to look at because there are challenges within the Black community that need to be looked at, okay? So as we look back at say, Dr. King and the Civil Rights Movement and the Voting Rights Act, how does that factor into why BLM is who they are, basically saying, hey, Blacks are still oppressed and everything is terrible and it's white supremacy, all right? So that's what we're going to do next week. I guess I better remind everybody, have a nice Valentine's Day, and you hubbies better find something nice and get the girlfriend too. So take care. Lori, thank you so much for your indulgence for an extra minute. Y'all have a great week. Au revoir.
Thank you, Dr. Lou. This is WABF, Mobile Fair Hope, Great Music and Memories. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review, brought to you by an anonymous donor and Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on Highway 98 in Daphne and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. This program will be posted at WABF1480.com to listen to it later.